sitting by fire and smoke. That gentle background crackle that you never quite notice it's there, but without it this wouldn't be the same. And across the flame, relaxing in loose cloth shorts and nothing else, is a draconic figure. Small horns and a mane of black hair, snake-like tongue, a slight muzzling around the jaw, a flat nose, and a body adorned in scale with long claws, and with wings that are even now spreading, surrounding. I need to go somewhere, and I have to bring at least one other person with me. It's not a journey you can make alone. I'll be standing in for the gatekeeper, though you may meet her on other nights. For the cost of coming here is, this place will take notice of you, and it may bring you back, and I have no power over that. But I can tell you that if you eat no food, and I mean prepared food, you can ingest natural substances, such as syrup and berries, and even berries in tea. Tea is always safe. She pauses, sitting up and staring at you, seated on her log across the fire, and she counts on her fingers. She says them slow, as though dredging the rules from a deep memory. You may always drink tea and must not refuse it if it is offered, but it will not be offered to you too often. Instead, it will be set out, and you may take some. All natural substances are safe. All prepared foods are not. Now, a place being unsafe doesn't mean it is not fun or rewarding, but avoid prepared food on this journey. Give no one your name. Whatever you are asked to do by royalty, you should consider not doing it, to see what happens. And you can return home at any time by simply stopping the journey and saying home. These little safety measures are here. Because, again, you may be visiting this place without me, and learning its rules early is good. And you'll be rewarded with something you can take back and do your own experimentation with. So let us begin. The wings wrap close. They've now grown large enough to encircle you, your log, her across it, and the fire. When the wings close, the fire banks down, down, and she walks closer. There's still faint smoke, but it's quite comfortable, breathable. The smell is nice, and when she reaches out to lay her palm to yours, whatever it is she says is ripped away by a sudden wind that positions the two of you neatly, standing though you had been sitting. You get the sense there was a great fall, and maybe that it was excised from your memory. Such things happen, is all the explanation that the dragon gives. And then she's behind you, gesturing to the room. I didn't think we'd get this one, but I guess I should have. You ask her why, curious how the teleportation to wherever this is has worked. It's dark all around you. There's a table ahead, there's something. But then she's speaking. Some rituals work because the right object is in the right place. Catalyst theory, that you just need to put things in close alignment, and they'll interact with each other. But some gates only work if you have a quality. If you have a very special and particular nature. And I think you're sweet. Sweet enough to eat. And so you've ended up somewhere with something else sweet to eat, and drink, and imbibe, absorb, sup on the stuff of your own slow seduction. And you feel your companion's hand at your wrist, red skin and scale, eyes glazed. They won't notice you until the lust begins. And whatever that means, she's walking ahead, but not pulling, just keeping her hand in yours. Step after step, her long tail hanging down to her ankles, her legs striding on ahead. And you do find her attractive, and you do begin to lust. You think back to the wings that ferried you here, surrounding you both, now shrunk so small on her back. The smoke has cleared. This place here is dark. Black painted walls. This is a dark place, and the illumination is coming from nowhere. The walls are painted, but the space itself is lit equidistantly. There's a tea set on a tea table. You walk closer. You lean down and inspect it. Your draconic companion follows. She gets close and takes one of the cups, which is filled with red, rich elixir. Juice from local berries. Local to where, you ask? After all, this is a dark room. A table, teacups, that's all. She takes a drink and you watch. Eyes which shut and then flare purple, red. Grinning at you, daring you. One of the cups in your hand. Take a long swig. Breathe deeply. Cooling elixir flows through a body you didn't even know was hot. And when your eyes open, everything is swimming with afterimages. The dark room is there. The walls are there. But now you see doors and mirrors. And doors which look like mirrors. And mirrors which look like doors. And when they fold outward, a field of flowers. Red poppies as far as you can see. You look in another direction at blue roses, not normally found in nature. Perhaps they've been dyed, a color that branches out to the horizon. And in another direction beyond her, white flap and then daisies. Again, a field of nothing but daffodils in bloom. A place of strange, thoroughly out-of-place flowers, each striated into long wedges, toward a distant but circular horizon point. And there are paths between these, in all directions from the room, leading to the horizon. Your companion points toward the poppy field, and the two of you set off from that puzzle box encasement. Was this some capsule she used to check what the world was like outside? Or was it just the receiving room for whatever lies beyond? Her steps are unsteady and so are yours. You follow. Your steps, every one, the tingling from your feet, up your legs, thighs. Heat is dripping and drooling over your consciousness. You feel it. You throb for it. She walks you there, takes your arm, and you walk her, supporting her with yours. You ask, managing somehow to stumble over these words. You ask what was in that liquid you drank unquestioningly. Maybe you should have asked more. But she's always known for coming back with interesting stories, and you want to tag along. Euphoria. The world around you is welcome. You want stories like that. So yeah, you manage to ask where you're going. Barely. Or maybe she intuits the question. Just a place to get some urges out. There are rare herbs. And the dangers that there are tend to not stick. We'll return home by morning. by the time the fire on the other side burns out. She gestures to the poppies, indicating you should take a closer look. You do, and you don't hear the caution when you lean down. Red mist is rising from them. You inhale. There's a glistening berry at the center of each one, ripe for the picking. Deep, deep breath. It smells good. Earthy and musky, and your eyes roll back. Pleasure. Pleasure. The space between your legs. The space between your ears. Pleasure. Groaning. Twitching. This is way better than the regular thing, she says, leaning over your shoulder. But she didn't breathe it in. She pulls you away and you're pliable. It's easy to do that. It's easy to do anything, as long as it's not your own idea. Lovely external influence guides you and turns you back on the path. The place we're going tonight, she says. I needed a wing person, someone to help me out. Because there's going to be two demands on our time. She gestures ahead along the path that travels between the fields. Overhead, you realize there isn't a sun, just a blue sky. Everything is lit clear as day, as though from within, and there's a hedge mage in the distance. Green, verdant. She takes you by the hand, you stagger toward it, drawn to it. The scent of berries. The taste of the juice sliding down your throat, your tongue licks the roof of your mouth, sensual and warm. Even that is a sexual organ now, fluttering, lips and tongue and everything together, and also the oral fixation you feel after tasting, after savoring. You stagger forward, she leads the way. She holds you by the arm and leads the way perfectly. There's a slight downward slope to the maze, and then you're at the entrance. You try to ask if she's going to be able to lead the way, but then you pause, and you stare past her into the deeper reaches of the maze. You see a figure only for a moment, body adorned in some finery in yellow and orange. And there's a thing there between the legs, something you need in your mouth, you need to lick. Spasms, your lower back making you thrust your hips, your tongue hanging out, drooling. The euphoria in your spine, your brain leaks and drips. She nods and lets you lead the way. You've had more of the substance, you'll know exactly where to go. She pushes you forward and follows closely. The ground is covered in leaves, grasses, vines, forming a wonderfully springy cushion to walk on, and carrying you forward. Directly, you notice that when she walks behind you, her footfalls are silent now. She's more used to the high, but your mind is submitting to colors that aren't colors, feelings that are visuals, the air beneath you warm and good, companionship, communion, desire, stagger. Forward, you turn at certain turnings, the dragon behind you. Every turn you take, there's a little bit of that mist, some pollen, a vapor in the air, like what came from the poppies. You walk through clouds of it, and you hear her duck and weave to move around it. You breathe it in, welcome it into your body, your tingling, sensitized body. The fields of vapor seem to clear once you pass through them, letting her easily avoid additional. Oh, it's so much like you're coming. You're going to come, but there's only aftershocks, only afterglow, a climax you've already had and forgotten or that never arrived, but the surrounding pliability. The slow, distracted distension of your mind getting fucked and you barely noticing it. Climax being forgotten, so it's just an afterglow that gets heavier and headier, heavier and headier. And she's always behind you, keeping you standing, keeping her grip on your collar, guiding you. You follow your own internal guidance, staggering forward, finding what you need. Because what you need is at the middle of that maze. Forward and back. left and right. At last, the figure from before. No, two. No more. Around the edges of this vast square room, the hedges making up its walls, there are figures in orange and yellow, no, it's fur. There are gorgeous androgyne figures who have dark little swords at their sides and big dark eyes. And in the center of the room, a colossal pink flower. And two women with green skin, luscious breasts, and long tails that you see are connected to the bud of the flower. And they sit there, nipples showing, legs parted, but leaves covering the space between their legs. They stand. The leaves stay in place, giggling gleefully. Ominously? No, no. They sound happy. They speak in unison. They rush toward the dragon and pick her up, fighting over her, tugging to and fro, peeling off the very little clothing she's wearing. Red breasts, dark brown nipples. You see the way the dragon's pupils are dilated, and you know your own must a cloud of pink light around the women. One beckons to you. You approach. You brought a friend, they say to your draconic companion. And she says, well, you know, I could never focus on more than one of you at once, and other people deserve the fun. The sisters giggle, clearly twins, faces gorgeous, the one that splits off to grasp you, but there is a monochrome, for they are green all over, though they have darker green lips, a monochrome beauty and a very symmetrical one to them. They look as if they were made rather than born, but then again, so many plants do. Perfect, too perfect, and you're drawn into her arms. Your face between her breasts, you smell that pollen. She must sweat it out through her skin. And it's glistening. She guides you down to your knees. In the background, your companion is being lifted in the air by the other and taken behind her to the flower that must be their bed or their throne. There is a strangeness about their long green hair, some of it tapering into vines, a metallic circlet, the darkest green of all, almost black, in each of their hairs. Ah, these are monarchs. Is this place just full of... Well, you theorize about the nature of it for like 1 second before you're on your knees face to face with that leaf. Your instructor and the other one are wrestling, moaning, the sounds of slurping and suction. Helplessly caught. There is a chime, as if from some massive clock tower. Ding! Filling the space you're in, really more like a finger around a wine glass, the size of a building. Just ding. The women in front of you bite their lips, both the one you're staring up at and the one playing with the dragon. Their hands leave your body. They're frozen in place, staring. You meet your instructor's eyes for a second through the haze of dosed, dopey sublimation. But they are frozen, except it appears between their legs. There's a puffy, dripping pussy there. The leaves move aside. There's a clit, no. That pulsing, throbbing, upraised thing is a cock. It looks like once their anatomies may have been different, but that thick, engorged thing there, rising up perfect and proud, its bulbous head just big enough to slip onto your tongue, its underlying shaft rigid with veins, what once may have been a hood pulled back and reforged, making a rigidness that makes your knees shake. You want it in your mouth, and it's the only part of them that's not green. It is berry-like, a pink or red, rigid, upturned thing. A cock fit to just fit inside your mouth perfectly. You think about how the proportions mean you're going to be able to put your tongue underneath the tip of it. You're going to be able to serve it so well. The entire runtime of your brain, frantically, fantastically devoted to T-Dick service. You extend that tongue, and it seems, even with your eagerness, you are still slower than your instructor, who has two fingers, at the request of her companion, curled inside the pussy and lips around that dick, sucking, bobbing. You see helplessness, almost panic, on the dragon's face, and then a steady calm. The bud in front of you, you lean in and suck that pink, perfect prick inside your mouth. And you are lost between the thighs. She sits back against some plant, or maybe one of the bee attendants came forward to attend her. But she's sitting and spreading her legs, and since all you can think of is sucking on the tip of that dick, you do. It stands proud just above her pussy. It stands pulling and pushing the skin on your tongue, tasting so sweet. The throbbing heat of it, the concentrated heat, it is so intense. It's bathing your cheeks, your lips, your face. The space between those legs is a hot, needy place. The space between your legs is a hot, needy place. And then the vines, which were so plentiful before, are more scarce on the ground now. They reach up and begin to massage your body, one between your legs. One teases your ass. You suck on the berry bright clit in front of you, hard as you can, the most delicious thing in the world, which in your mind this surely is, juices down the back of your throat. Your arms go slack. You wanted to play with her ass. Ooh, that's a good idea, says some voice, meandering through your mind. She's rooting through your mind as her T-Dick slides over your tongue, resting its tip at the back, as her dripping front hole washes juices over your chin. Nectar, nectar. You suck, you lick, you slurp, but your arms won't rise, and then they do, like they got an instruction from within. There, I think I figured out how to work the arms, she says as you suck. The substance, the nectar, the juice, controlling you know her like an organism, like a parasitic flower. A bud of her is inside your head. Her big dick is in your mouth, and it's in control. She's squeezing and spasming, thrusting while your hands massage her, hands that do not feel like your own. Your senses don't either. The smell of her is getting somehow more appealing. More and more appealing, you need it, you suck it in deep, you need it like air, you try to keep control over you, but that berry nectar from before was drawing you back, across this place, across the vast hole. She's actually frozen right now. When that chime struck, it froze both of them in massive orgasms. The nectar normally only comes out when they're coming. That must be something your instructor did. One sensation, you are connected to this flower, which is a vast organism. They aren't twins. They are part of the same creature, and you suck. And you drink in nectar. It's so hard at the base of her T-Dick on your tongue. Your tongue alight like a second sexual organ as you slurp. Connected to her, controlled by her. Wonderfully. Thoroughly flooded from the tip, from the juices below, from everywhere. You feel something building up behind the place you're sucking. Something that's about to squirt out of that cock, but you don't let it. You hold it back with your fingers, thumb and forefinger. You know it's very important to hold it back. You hear your instructor sliding her scaled lips off the clit in front of her. She stands, gulping the last bit of nectar. Somehow she has the willpower to stand up. They can't come unless they both come. But if one of them comes, why wouldn't be here to hold back? She explains. I needed someone to hold the other clit, so I just put a little suggestion in you to do just that. Now I've got this one. None of us can come. The twins are groaning, looking at each other. But you need it too, they say in unison, tossing their hair back, green skin glistening with that pheromonal sweat. And your instructor says, I need other things more, and takes a glass bottle from nearby, slides it over the tip of the twin's clit. Yes, now just a small clitoral bud. It seems the flower goes back inside when it's not erect, and gets huge when it wants to become a cock. You watch as something stronger, sweeter, deeper spurts into the vial. You feel it. Something is there. But it's not enough. There's a last drop inside. The twins are resisting climax. Even if you let go, even if you let go of that bud you've been holding in yours, they wouldn't come. Force her to come, the dragon commands, reaching down and beginning to stroke the one in front of her. You look at the big, still thick nub. What the other is currently sporting is a small clit being rubbed in circles, but you've got a cock in front of you, an erecting thing that slides on your tongue. You finally play with her ass. You remember, earlier, you figured it out. She really wanted you to play with her butt. That's because you slip a finger up inside, and you find the bulbous back body of the larger iceberg of pleasure, and begin to massage that anal spot, making her cock spurt, squirt, hard, hot. You feel it, they're grasping, gasping, they can't focus. You see how the pleasure flowing through all of you, interconnected like one organism, is making everything in your head roll away. You never had time to feel it before. They've been feeling so good. Climax arrives when you're detached from it. When you were serving, sucking, you weren't allowed to feel coming, hot, dripping, belly full of that juice, coming. You see that bile has been gathered, bearing the last golden nectar from the one you just finished off. You squirm. You want to get back to them. You want to suck again. Pull those big buds into your mouth. But you're dragged along and out, and your brain just says, please let me suck. Please let me serve. Please let me suck. That vial of hidden prize is tucked away. Moving forward, she manages to calm you down by kissing and letting you suck desperately at her lips, capturing just a little bit of the nectar. Blank and compliant, you walk back to the tea table. You notice that she's positioned you over her nipple on her flat chest to suckle at a droplet of the nectar there. You keep doing so, looking for every trace of it. Your belly feels swollen with that nectar, elixir, the honey, the juice on your tongue runs down her back as she picks you up bodily. And then you're back at the campfire, eyes opening. You tell her you want more of that elixir, that nectar, as you come to, realizing you've come within your clothing as well. No. You can't have any of this. Neither of us really could. I didn't drink it. This is different. But I'll definitely make sure that when my pay comes in, you get your cut. You did get one drop of it right at the end, I think. She moves her clothing to the side, revealing her bare, flat chest, but you can see a few golden spots where some of the nectar stained her skin. There's none left, but I guess I have a few gold scales. My sister's a gold... And then you move over to her and begin to suck, licking at the spots where those droplets fell, now dyed in gold. She grips you by the scruff of your neck, pulls you to her body, encourages you to keep sucking, wraps one leg around you, her wings cocoon you both. And then, well, suck, lick, droplets that clear your mind. And all you do is suck, lick, until she gently asks if you're done. And you suppose that you are. But you know that if she invited you again, you'd begin again and she'd have to stop you. Your whole world lost in the memory of how good it was, in throes of one vast plant-based orgasm, organism, orgasm. You suckled at those droplets and cherished the way they broke you open and filled you with light and heat. And things down deep.